back to another week of Smart Mouth. I'm your host, Catherine Spires. And before we get into the show, I wanted to thank our latest Patreon supporter, Rachel. You are an angel. I appreciate it so much. If anyone else wants to check out the Patreon, see how you can support this podcast, go to patreon.com/smartmouthpodcast. And now on to the show. Hello, Jessica.
Hello. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for coming out here.
Thank you for inviting me.
I'm in between your work and your home because, as we were discussing, you have a very silly commute,
mm-hmm.
but not the silliest.
Yes, definitely not.
Jessica Lou Hay is the executive chef at a place called Esther's Wine Shop and Bar. Did I pronounce your name correctly?
But Hay is also the same. So.
Is it? You don't have to say that.
No, but like a lot of people do say that. Lou, as long as you get the Lou right.
Yeah.
Hay is like H-E or he, you know, it's like same thing. A lot of people don't say he because they don't want to say the word he or she. So they say Hay a lot. So it's very common.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. I wasn't thinking of it that way, but that's probably it. That makes sense. I'm sorry.
No, no, don't be sorry.
Jessica Lou He.
Yes.
See, my family pronounces our name incorrectly, I think.
Really?
Well, okay. So my last name is pronounced Spires.
Uh-huh.
Everyone always pronounces it Spears.
Spears. No, I was going to say Spires.
Really?
Because I was like thinking of like spy with the E-R-S. But then I was like, Spears would have been confusing to me.
Okay, so you get it. You get it. Sometimes I think my family is just like being difficult on purpose.
Oh, no.
I don't know.
I mean, it's a last name. You want to be unique. Oh.
Yeah, that's true, I guess. But it's also like it's the Scottish pronunciation and I guess the German pronunciation is more common. I don't know.
Interesting.
Who knows? Who knows? So you haven't been at this restaurant for very long.
No, not very long. Yes, less than a year.
And I feel like you're just like at the beginning stages of your career.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, this is like the first door to many that I'm like not even ready for in a sense.
I like the way that you think, but this is good. You're getting your feet wet at a place that like, so it's part of a restaurant group.
Yes, correct. Rustic Canyon Restaurant Group.
Which for people who are outside of the industry, being in a restaurant group means that you have like a much bigger safety net,
mm-hmm.
right? In terms of like there's money coming from other places.
I mean, I think it's more so kind of like a foundation. You know, there's so many different avenues and like, business outlooks, you know, like Esther's is like a wine shop and then there's Rustic Canyon that's super like farmers market focus and mm-hmm. vegetable, and then we got Casilla that it's like Southeast Asian flavors mm-hmm. and it's just like more so for me in a perspective, I see it as a way where I can go to different chefs from different venue or restaurants and ask them for advice like, hey, how did you do this and how did you do that? You know, there's like Huckleberry and Milo that are like super beasts, you know, for lunch and brunch. And it's just kind of like, I'm trying to get there.
Yeah.
And I can like ask the chefs, you know, like, you know, it's very humbling to see like what a great restaurant group this is, you know.
That's awesome. I like that you were talking about the art. I'm all like, there's money, right? And you're like, no, but it's about the food. Right.
Yeah. I don't know about the money part, but.
There's other people for that.
Yeah. I don't know too much about that. It's just more so where I go to and like, you know, being able to ask a chef for help and everything like that. It's just humbling.
Is it the idea that you could like transfer to other restaurants easily? Like I know that in mm-hmm. like in an individual restaurant, people will sometimes try out the different stations and different kinds of cooking.
Yeah.
Is that sort of the same thing writ large when you have a restaurant group?
I'm not sure entirely. I don't know if they do that. I've only been here for less than a year. So I'm like still like, want to make sure I master Esther's before I look at anywhere. But
that's
I think that they give the opportunity if, you know, the door is open and then they'll mm-hmm. probably like, you know, see if you're interested. But I'm not sure yet. I don't, mm-hmm. I haven't seen an opportunity like that, but.
Well, no, it's actually good that you have your head down and you're focusing on the task at hand.
Yes, exactly. Right. I love Esther's. So it's a great restaurant to be a part of.
What kind of food do you cook there?
So we are like, I would say American cuisine in a sense. We don't really have much of like, we have to say like super French or super American or super mm-hmm. like Asian or whatever. Mm-hmm. But as long as we make and create dishes that pairs well with wine, the owners are happy.
Pairs well with wine.
Yeah. So a lot of food that I create and coming like from an Asian family, like I love spicy food and I love like super like flavorful stuff, but sometimes that's too much for wine.
Okay,
so when I like one time I did this octopus dish and I put like a jalapeno and they were like, this is spicy. And for me, I'm like, oh no, it's a great heat. But they're like, no, but try to take a bite, drink it with wine. And I'm like, oh shoot. Yeah. I'm trying to chase away that chilliness.
Yeah.
So it's like teaching me how to like pair great food with great wine. So
that's cool. That's yeah. always a good skill.
Exactly.
You'll be so popular.
Hopefully I just do good at food. So.
Right. So you had mentioned like amongst your list of mm-hmm. a lot of foods that like are good and interesting to you, a lot of Asian foods. And then like you hit me with a curve bar with nut butters.
Mm-hmm.
What?
So nut butter, I grew up not liking PB&J. I mean,
me too.
Yeah, it's just one of those things where maybe just my family, okay. we never ate peanut butter and jelly.
Uh-huh.
So like going to school and everybody's like, I'm gonna eat apples and peanut butter. I'm like, ew, that's gross. Like, why are you doing that? Like, eat an apple or whatever. Peanut butter was never my thing. Yeah. So like working brunch restaurants or like my last job, and then working brunch now for Esther's, mm-hmm. trying to revamp it. Like, I realized that nut butter is a different form of PB&J in a fancier way. Maybe right. I'm like totally explaining this wrong, but you can do so much with nut butter. There's like almonds, there's cashews, there's mm-hmm. hazelnut. And it's kind of like you don't need to eat peanut butter. And that's what made me love our nutty toasts. But we had her nut butter at her restaurant and I was like, what is this? Let me try it. So then I was just like, this is good.
What kind of nut?
I think hers uses almonds, okay. and then she seasoned it. There's one that's like clove and cardamom. There's an original one, which is just nut butter and right. some like very light spices. And there's another one that is like Aztec chocolate. Ooh. My favorite was a clove and the cardamom because like we put it with jam on mm-hmm. a really thick Milo and olive bread mm-hmm. and top it off with whatever market fruit that I find. So right now we have it with persimmons and mixed berries and okay. like a little bit peaches because there's still some peaches coming in, but not too much.
When we're recording, by the time this airs, there probably won't be any
yeah.
peaches. So basically, I mean, I feel like peanut butter, I don't know why I don't love it, but mm-hmm. I think it might be a little bit that it's one note. I'm
yeah.
thinking that just as you're talking about adding the spices
yeah,
to it.
Yeah, definitely. It's just, I don't know, peanut butter, I would say it's just very thick and mm-hmm. like, I mean, it's creamy, but it's just wasn't like appealing to me.
Yeah.
But nut butter is like, there's like almonds that has a little bit more oil and then cashews that's a yeah. little bit more sweet and
yeah.
so many different nuts. And then when I tried the cardamom and clove one, I was just kind of like, whoa, like this changed the game for nut butter, like,
yeah.
or peanut butter in a sense. Or.
Well, I wonder if, so, because we talk about allergies a lot. Mm-hmm. We have to talk about allergies if we're
yeah.
going to talk about peanuts especially. But it kind of went, so peanut butter was like started as a health food.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's how it was marketed. I shouldn't say started. When people started marketing food, peanut butter was marketed as a health food. And then it became a junk food.
Yeah.
And then it kind of became a health food again
mm-hmm.
For the protein. Because
yeah.
people are super into protein and less afraid of fat currently.
Yes.
But I wonder if the other nut butters, how much they were created just as a reaction to the increase in peanut allergies.
Yeah,
in America.
I think so, definitely. But it's just more so, the food world is evolving so much, like, you know, cashew cheese and stuff like that. You know, who would have ever thought just because people are vegans and mm-hmm. things like that, you know? And as a chef, it makes you think, like, who would have thought to use one of the most expensive nut, almond, to make into a butter? That's like,
that's a really good point.
That's like sort of intense,
yes,
you know?
Yes,
but then
yes.
maybe somebody that used to like peanut butter can't eat it, and then they want something creamy and protein and fatty, natural fat, you know, not like
yeah.
heavy fat, but like they just probably thought like this is what we can do. And
yeah.
then it evolved to this whole different door of different nuts. But
that totally makes sense. Even when I was in high school, we were family friends with this couple that had a little kid who apparently had a million food allergies.
Mm-hmm.
And for like years, he literally only ate yogurt and peanut butter.
Interesting. Which is like the two most common like allergies that people have.
I know. Isn't that weird?
That is very weird.
That's a trip.
It is crazy. And I didn't realize like growing up, like all these allergies and how parents are so like aware, you know, like my my niece in China, mm-hmm. she's not allowed to eat nuts when she was like an infant, you know, yeah. or like when she was like 1 to 3. Yeah. I think even now she's not eating much nuts because they're scared that she's going to have a peanut allergy. Wow. But my best friend that has daughters, she's like, yeah, go ahead, eat it. Like, you know, you're going to have to figure it out one way or the other if you're going to be allergic. But then it's like totally different, like China versus America, like how they raise their kids, some in fear and some in kind of like, all right, we'll right. see how it goes, you know, but
right. nut that is true. Like, you never know where an allergy is going to come from, especially because they can like wax and wane exactly. over time. There's yeah. so many adults who sit down to eat shrimp one day and like completely puff up, and it's never happened before.
Yeah, definitely.
Which is so scary.
It is scary. I'm like so grateful that I'm like not allergic to much stuff. Mm-hmm. It's only like persimmons, which is a hachia one, the soft ones.
Yeah.
And my throat closed up in high school, and I was kind of like, oh my goodness, what is this feeling? Like, my yeah. parents never told me I can be allergic to anything, you know?
Oh, yeah.
But it's like, I was eating it in culinary class, and I was just kind of like, why is my throat closing up? I need to go to the nurse. And then they're like, you're fine. I'm like, I'm not fine. I can't feel, like, I feel it closing up. And then I went to the hospital, and they're like, oh, yeah, you're allergic. And I'm like, oh, what does that mean?
That's
like,
crazy. Just the one kind of persimmon?
Yeah, so I can eat the fuyu one, the hard, crunchy one, yeah. which is my favorite anyways.
Okay, good, good, good.
But then I was just kind of like, I would have never thought. And like now, like seeing so many chefs work with that one that I'm allergic to, I'm just kind of like, man, can't even create with it. Like, I can't even taste it, you know?
Yeah. Can you not touch it even?
I can touch it. I just can't eat it.
So speaking of which, like, there's this book called Another Person's Poison, mm-hmm. written by someone named Matthew Smith, and he talks about the history of food allergies and mm. how recent it is that people take them seriously.
Yeah.
Like, that it used to be considered, like, an allergist mm-hmm. was considered a joke profession.
Really?
Yeah. Like, wow. real, like, snake oil, like, not to be believed. There's a lot of people, medical professionals, who really believe, maybe not in the last couple of years, but for a long time, that food allergies were actually, like, in your head.
There's someone that I work with that's allergic to a lot of things. Mm-hmm. Dairy, sugar, which she can only eat honey or whatever. I think she's allergic to cane sugar, which is a lot of stuff.
Oh my god.
And then like garlic and other stuff. So every time I want to make family meal, yeah. I'm like, oh shoot, I'm sorry, you can't eat this. Like, garlic is so used to me, and
yeah.
adding a little sugar to like sweeten up the spice, and then I'm just like, oh, I feel bad every time when I'm cooking. But she will go into flames, you know, and that's really? Like, I see it in a way where, like, people should be afraid because your body really yeah. can't break it down.
Well, it's sort of the difference between an allergy and an intolerance.
Yeah.
Right?
That is very true. Yeah.
Like, I kind of feel that way about how most humans are probably a little gluten intolerant.
Mm-hmm.
Like, pizza upsets my stomach, but I know that's because pizza dough is so high gluten.
Oh, really?
They just work it to death.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't say that I have a gluten allergy or anything yeah. like that. It's just like some things will kind of mess up your stomach a little.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Like, me and my younger sister are like, what is it? The one that can't drink dairy.
Lactose.
Uh-huh. And we would still go get boba milk tea.
Yeah.
And then we would both like, oh, why did we do it? And then we'll do it again the next time we see each other.
Right.
Which is like kind of like, I wouldn't say I'm allergic to dairy. I still love cheese, but uh-huh. like there's like certain things that I do like. But milk, I'm just kind of like, I'm going to drink a glass of milk, even though I know my stomach is going to hurt tomorrow,
right.
you know?
Just deal with the fallout of it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. I feel like that like really shows that you're like a true chef, because you're like, if it tastes good, nothing else yeah. matters.
Exactly.
So since the main nut butter is mm-hmm. peanut butter, we'll talk a little bit about the history of that. And European colonizers learned about peanuts from South and Central America, mm-hmm. which is where they're native to. Learned how to roast them, all that kind of stuff from the native people. And since peanuts keep, and peanuts and peanut oil, mm-hmm. The colonizers took them back on their ships everywhere else that they went. Mm-hmm. And peanuts became especially popular in like the northern half of Africa and in like China, Southeast Asia.
Interesting.
Yeah. And those countries, China and India, even though I think they eat peanuts less in India than they do in China, but like they grow the most peanuts.
Oh, I never knew that.
Yeah, we're totally into like talking about how they're like a Southern American thing, and they are, but mm-hmm. they grow more of them in Asia.
Interesting.
That's kind of the way these things go sometimes. Asia yeah. has a lot more land.
Yeah, they do. They're lucky.
So the peanuts actually, even though they're American in the mm-hmm. sense of like North and South America, they came to North America by way of Africa.
Mm.
So, which is something that you see a lot back in the quote unquote triangle trade, is mm-hmm. that a lot of the foods that had come from South America went to Africa first and then came back.
Yeah.
With all the enslaved people.
Mm-hmm.
So peanut plants are really good for soil.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah. All the nutrients that they leach out into that soil makes them like a great cover crop of a great, what's the term? When the fields are fallow in between seasons, they grow the, I'm sure all the farm nerds out there know what I'm talking about. I can't remember the term. I could Google it, but I won't cheat.
Mm-hmm.
So they were considered more of like an in-between crop. Mm. It was more about like the soil health. They weren't ever considered a fancy food, especially during the Civil War,
mm-hmm.
because starving soldiers would just dig them up and eat them.
Oh.
So that's what it was associated with. It was not a sexy dish. But then, so around 1900, it looks like the culture changed its mind
mm-hmm.
about peanuts. I don't know why. I don't know if there was some like association of peanut growers that put the word out or what it was. But magazines and newspapers straight up were talking about how they used to be tacky and now they're not. The Richmond Dispatch said that peanuts are no longer considered vulgar. And around the same time in 1902, Good Housekeeping Magazine had a whole dang article that was called The Social Rise of the Peanut.
Wow. That's very interesting.
I thought so. So it's just, I love it when things are self-aware because it so infrequently happens. Mm-hmm. But they were like, hey, wait a minute. We used to think this was tacky and now we don't.
Yeah, right?
Let's talk about this.
Yeah, definitely.
And there's no reason why it would have changed. It was the same product.
Yeah.
It's all about perception.
Yeah, it's how they sell it in a sense.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, I think about that with Spam.
Mm-hmm.
Because Spam, the reason it wasn't considered fancy is because it was often for foods during times of privation, like mm-hmm. war. Like my grandma grew up eating it because she lived in Hawaii during the war. But then around 10 years, well, mainstream maybe like 5 years ago or so, mm-hmm. people are like, ooh, have you heard of Spam?
Right.
And people are like, yes. But the people who run like the fancy restaurants were like, look at this thing that you can do with this product.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I haven't so much looked into it, but I don't know if Spam, like Hormel, the company that makes it, is like, yes, we don't know how this happened, but we're so stoked that we did. Or if they like actively planted those seeds somehow.
Ah, that's a very good question. Because growing up, Spam was kind of like one of those things where, oh, you couldn't afford chicken or steak.
Mm-hmm.
And I ate it with fried rice. Like Spam fried rice was like my go-to. And, like, I thought it was something to be ashamed of, but now everybody's like, Spam this, Spam that, deep fry this. Like,
yeah.
And I'm just kind of like, and Spam now is like almost $5 a can. Back then, I don't even remember what it was, but.
Interesting.
It wouldn't even be that much because it was at Costco. Costco was like a deal for like.
I wonder if that's just like cost of being alive stuff or if they've inflated it too because they know they can get more.
I don't know. That's a very good question because there's knockoff like versions of Spam.
For sure.
Like my brother-in-law prefers the knockoff version.
Really?
And he's like, oh yeah, it tastes better. And I tasted it. I was like, no, it's not Spam. You can't call it Spam because it's not Spam, you know?
That's so funny. I wonder, when you said like there's other versions of it, which I guess I knew, like my instant reaction is like, ew.
Yeah.
Why? It's the same thing.
Yeah. It's like, exactly. Like when I open it and I was just kind of like, what is this? My sister was like, yeah, it's good. I'm like, no, it's not. I mean, but it's just like knowing Spam is how Spam is.
Yeah. They just use the other ones, use a different spice mix or mm-hmm. whatever. And it's like, I think not.
Yeah.
And the thing is that Spam fried rice, Spam musubi, mm-hmm. all that stuff is delicious.
It is.
I don't know about Spam that you haven't like refried, but once you fry it again.
Yeah. Like I think I've done a version where I fried it, like mm-hmm. pan fried it, mm-hmm. and then I put it in a Spam musubi and deep fried the Spam musubi. Don't judge me. I have a really bad
am not judging you.
Fry this and fry that and I'll be good.
Yeah, why not? You know what surprised me that I enjoyed was deep fried Oreos.
Mm. I tried that once. And I'm not a biggest sweet tooth type of person. I'm more so of like a savory. That's why if you're telling me fry this, I'll try it.
But yeah.
I tried the fried Oreo and I was kind of like, warm Oreos. I don't know how I feel about this.
Fair.
It was kind of interesting to me because you just eat it dip it in the milk and call it a day, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with the simple version of it. Yeah. That's for sure.
But there's a lot of fry stuff. Fried butter, fried Twinkie, mm-hmm. fried everything.
Fried everything. They'll try everything. I think there was fried beer.
Interesting.
At one of the, which I don't remember the science behind it.
But I don't even know how that would happen.
That's America. Have you added spam to your menu at Esther's?
No, I have not. We like to make everything like super farm to table in a way and sustainable and everything. But I do get it for my family meals. So everybody, oh, we got spam today.
That's so funny.
I'm the bad like little person at the restaurant and everybody eats really healthy. Mm-hmm. Like I'll bring like pizza rolls.
And then they love them, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're like, it's always you when you're working, we eat bad. I'm like, yeah, we have to live a little.
Right. You know? No, I actually totally agree with that. I've become more nihilistic lately, and I'm like, eat what you want.
Yeah.
Who cares?
Just be happy.
Yeah.
That's what food is all about, you know?
I agree.
Great times, even if it's bad. Food makes you better. Break up, ice cream. Celebration, drinks, and, like, fancy food, you know? Like, going out for a birthday.
Yeah, there's a food for every life event.
Exactly.
That's kind of like how now in America, when people die, everyone brings you casseroles.
Interesting, because it's like homemade and
and I think feeds a crowd and you can freeze it if you need to. Yeah, and now casseroles are kind of like a death food. I mean, they are in Utah called funeral potatoes.
Oh,
like it's a specific casserole that like they always call it that, even if they're not eating it at a funeral.
Oh,
but like not sadly.
Yeah, like it's like comforting.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Oh man. Do they have spam pizza rolls?
I'll look it up.
You could invent it.
Right?
That could be your thing.
Like little pieces of spam and like...
Ooh. In pizza dough? Deep fried if you like.
Right? Oh boy. The owners are going to listen to this like, oh my goodness, what are we going to do?
Listen, you contain multitudes. You can cook one kind of food professionally and a different kind of food for yourself at home, right?
Exactly.
I mean...
Experiment.
Yeah. And the fact that you even like eat... not in the kitchen like is actually kind of incredible. So many chefs don't really eat.
Yeah, well, I don't during my shift. It's just like the day where I like I'm like, okay, I'm gonna actually set 30 minutes to cook everybody food and I'll eat a little bit. But after I cook it, I still don't eat, and everybody's like, why'd you make the food and not eat it? And I'm like, I don't know. I really don't know. Something about being in the kitchen, we are not used to like putting time aside and be like, okay, we need to eat, we need to live.
Right.
You know, we're just kind of like work. After work, you're like, oh, I am hungry.
Yeah.
Like, what am I going to eat? What's the fast food? Which one's open? Which one's closed? Like, what can I eat now?
I feel like there's not a chef on the planet who doesn't have that dichotomy. Because every time, like before we start recording and I ask you guys what you ate for breakfast, it's always either nothing or trash.
Yeah.
That's the rule.
Yeah.
And it's funny because chefs, obviously, like, you know about food and you sort of know about nutrition.
Yeah.
Sometimes you know a lot. But, like, it's just, I think it's the same, like, doctors who smoke. Like, you're surrounded by something that you know in your head and that doesn't mean that, like, you live it.
Yeah, exactly. Also. I mean, all of my friends, they always look at my boyfriend like, who made dinner last night? And I'll be like, he did. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
Yeah.
And I would just tell him like, oh, like he must eat really good. I was like, honestly, I eat really good. Like
right.
I come home, he cooks dinner, and I thank God he does that or else I would make instant noodles. Like I eat really bad as a person. And I tell all my friends, like, if I eat knowing what I need to eat, I'd be really hot. But I don't, because I want French fries. I want noodles. I want rice.
First of all. Don't think of it that way. And you are really hot. And hotness comes from having a good time, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like the hottest people are happy people.
Exactly. You just have to give it off, you know?
Yeah.
But it's just like everybody's like, why do you eat these things? I'm like, because I need these things. Mm-hmm. They don't realize, like, at least from my perspective, like I see salads, I see sandwiches, I see chicken breasts, you know, I see all the healthy stuff that when I make it, I'm like, this does look really good. Mm-hmm. But when I try and sit and eat it, I'm just kind of like, no, not for me. You know, I grew up eating rice for breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Yeah.
So like eating a salad, I can do it once a week, but probably not once every day.
Well, that's interesting too, because that's a little bit like what the media portrays as healthful is Northern European healthful. So like healthy for different people of different backgrounds can mean different things.
Yeah.
But because of white supremacy everywhere, yeah. including the media. Like, we only talk about like certain preparations and ingredients and stuff
exactly.
like that.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Do what you want, basically.
Yeah. I still eat what I want to eat. Like yeah. this morning.
Yeah.
I was like, I need to lose weight. I need to be healthy. And mm-hmm. I was like, McDonald's. Yeah, I'll pull over.
That's life in America, right? Yeah. It's so hard. There's so
the
many
temptations.
Temptations.
Yes. Oh, my goodness.
It's true. But we try what we can. Oh, speaking of temptations. So Kellogg, mm-hmm. John Kellogg, who invented the Kellogg's company, he was obsessed with not giving in to any temptations
really?
Whatsoever. So he invented cornflakes because they didn't taste too good and he thought they were healthy. This is before they started just pouring sugar mm-hmm. on them
oh.
in the factory. They were supposed to be healthy. And one of the things that he was a big proponent of was peanut butter.
Mm.
And the idea, he always had people, not always, but a lot of people who came in already had health problems to Battle Creek where his sanitarium was. And a lot of people didn't have teeth.
Mm.
And the idea is that he was super into peanut butter because it was a way to get protein to people that they didn't have to chew. But also he didn't like for people to eat meat.
Mm.
So this was another substitute as well.
Yeah, because you do get a lot of proteins from nuts and everything.
Yeah.
Like that. Yeah.
And he was peanut butter. That's great. Super into people eating it, but he was a wackadoodle. Mm-hmm. And he also was extremely influential in the way that Americans eat. So George Washington Carver was the one who, popularized peanuts as, among other crops as one that more people should be planting in the South after cotton went bad one year.
Mm-hmm.
But there are various other people, like people who worked for Kellogg who like really developed a way to make peanut butter into the delicious and smooth snack that so many people enjoy. And I think it's so funny that people get so intense about whether they like it chunky or creamy.
Oh, I like mine's chunky.
You do?
Yes. I think creamy is just one note, you know, like mm-hmm. it's just creamy. Mm-hmm. There's no, I need that crunch, the different style of peanut yeah. butter. But the only version I really ate peanut butter growing up, and I think still now, I still don't eat PB&Js for some reason. I do it into a smoothie. Milk, peanut butter, banana, and ice. And it's the best.
Oh, that's really simple and makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'll add the peanut butter at the very end so my peanut chunks will still be there as a bite.
Oh, that's so fun. That is very chefly of you to like care that much about texture.
Right.
And to even think about it.
Yeah. It's just you need some type of like different like, wow. Ooh, now this bite. Oh, yes.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Oh, I like that. Okay. So as we were talking about earlier, and the whole point of the episode is that there are other nut butters.
Exactly.
Besides peanut butter. And of course, peanuts are not tree nuts
mm-hmm.
the way that most of the other things we consider nuts are. They are legumes, so they're the same family as peas, lentils, that
yeah.
sort of thing. And that is why so many people who are allergic to peanuts are not allergic to, say, almonds.
Yeah.
Because they're totally different.
Exactly, which is interesting because people think it's in the same category.
Yeah. And they would, because they're both called nuts.
Yeah.
But I think the thing that sucks is people who are allergic to peanuts and tree nuts. Like, okay, well.
I get it.
Right.
Yes, because exactly. You can't even go any other way.
So there's the peanut butter. There's the almond butter. I think those are the two most popular, but you can get nuts with pistachio butter, hazelnut butter, cashew, walnut, pecans, macadamia nuts. They're all considered really healthy, although I thought it was funny. I like cashews, but apparently those ones are not a good source of fiber.
Interesting.
And that's one thing they don't.
I know that they're highest in fat.
The cashews are?
Yeah.
Look at
that's
me.
That's why everybody likes it.
Yes. High in fat, no fiber, give them to me.
That's what every time those trail yeah. mix, everybody's grabbing the cashews. I'm like, darn, I want a freaking cashew.
Cashews are so delicious.
Yeah. Right? And then I saw the like nutrition label because mm-hmm. I was like, okay, I'm going to try to be healthy. Look mm-hmm. which nuts. And I was like, ooh, I didn't know cashews weren't healthy for me.
Well, they're healthy.
But not in the healthiest form, you know, like they're like eat
right.
almonds or eat like
right.
not roasted, raw. And I'm just kind of like, ugh.
So I actually like them. Roasted or raw, I don't care, except for I normally buy them raw because when they roast them, they normally add salt.
Mm-hmm.
If I could find roasted unsalted, I'm in heaven.
Oh, I think they do that at like Sprouts.
Yeah. It's just a little bit harder to find. You can't find it at like a regular
yeah,
grocery
yeah, yeah.
store.
No.
And I think that like when you buy the nuts pre-salted, they're so disgusting.
Because mm-hmm. they're so salty.
Oh my God. It's
they have
shocking.
Like this like little layer of like light broken down salt, which is weird.
Yeah.
Because you would think they would use like normal salt.
Yeah, I don't think they do because it has that powdery texture.
Yeah, right? Like yeah. It's just so raw when you roast it at home, but.
Yes. Also, I think macadamia nuts are so good. Mm-hmm. And those, like, if you pick one up, you can feel how fatty it is. Yeah. It just, like, comes off in your fingers.
Yeah. It's really bad. So but good, it's so though. Good. Best in cookies.
Right?
Yes.
Why are macadamia nuts so good in cookies?
I think it's just the fat content, you know? Like, that it's like sense. When you do pie dough with butter, you know, it's just, mm-hmm. like, it's already going to be bad. But adding those chunks of butter instead of, like, melted butter, it's, like, different, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's just good. Like, I mean, almond chocolate chip cookies are good, but like white chocolate macadamia nut is like anywhere that has it, I'm like, I'm getting one.
Why? Yeah, I don't even like white chocolate, but a white chocolate macadamia nut cookie, I'm like,
it's like
yeah.
the standard.
Obviously, give me all of them.
Yeah.
So this is not all to say that nut butters are like a new trend.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah. Like maybe in terms of, I don't know, marketing. They are.
I think it's a new trend for people that are into food that are not super like health focused. Like it's been a standard for people that are healthy because they need to find like different sorts of, you know, proteins or like different flavors. I know if you're being a health person, yeah, you meal prep, you do your everyday stuff, mm-hmm. but like they probably look in different avenues. Like, oh, I'm not gonna eat peanut butter today. Let me eat almond butter or okay. let me eat like a different type of butter. But for like people like that are into food and not like super health conscious, mm-hmm. it's new for them because they're kind of seeing a lot of restaurants doing yeah. things that like make them interested in things, you know? And that's one of the reasons why I put the Nutty Toast on our brunch menu mm-hmm. because for me, it was kind of like an eye-opening experience. Like I've never had nut butter in this form.
Yeah.
You know, I've made my own, you know, like with cinnamon or whatever and like at my other job and stuff like that. But like I didn't even think to add other spices where somebody opened up the door for me and I'm kind of like, I want to share this to the world or yeah. whoever orders it, you know,
yeah.
like this is something you can do at home and it's like a fancy PB&J, but my version, you know,
it's just all anybody wants.
Yeah.
Fancy PB&J.
So it's definitely new for people that are like not super like health conscious mm-hmm. about nuts and stuff like that, mm-hmm. but more so kind of like eating brunch and they're kind of like, what do I want that's light but filling, you know? So
yeah, and it seems fancy because it's not something that they could like buy at the regular grocery store.
Yeah,
because you can buy these things at fancy grocery stores.
Yeah.
So in East Asia, almonds have always been used as like almond milk has been made for forever,
mm-hmm.
not as a dairy substitute because that's no, there's almost no such thing because they yeah. aren't eating a lot of cow dairy
yeah.
in East Asia. But like almond milk is not new mm-hmm. in China.
No. They mostly use like soy milk instead of almond milk because of, again, mm-hmm. with all the nuts, like they're super like, I didn't even realize how they were like so afraid to have like these allergies for their kids, you know?
That must be a new thing though.
I don't, maybe because like growing up, I would be able to like order food that has peanuts and like different types of nuts in them
yeah.
where like I thought it was normal to eat these things, you know?
But oh, for sure. I don't remember. So being a kid in the 80s, I don't remember allergies being a concern.
Yeah. It was just kind of like, oh, you can't eat peanut butter? Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I don't, not that I necessarily would remember, but I can't remember like any of my friends having any sort of allergies mm-hmm. that would kill them.
Yeah.
For instance.
I think I only had one person in like 7th grade. She had an EpiPen. And I'm like, what is this? She's like, oh, if I eat peanut butter mm-hmm. or peanuts or if I'm close to it, I need to stab myself. And I was just kind of like, what? What does this mean?
I know. And it's so terrifying.
Yeah. Because like they can die. And I'm just kind of like, oh, boy. Like,
well, that's so scary because a couple people in Great Britain have gone to jail in the last couple of years. Restaurant owners.
What?
And in one case, the delivery guy. Like the guy who made the delivery himself. They're going, I don't know if they've been sentenced yet as of this recording, but it's because these two teenage girls ordered delivery
mm-hmm.
and it was on the online delivery form and they put like allergic to peanuts.
Oh my goodness.
Like could kill us. And it was Indian food, I think, and they got it and one girl like died immediately and they went to the kitchen and saw that there were just peanut products everywhere and like they weren't keeping it clean. Absolutely not to blame the victim. I don't, if I had a food allergy that would kill me, I feel like I would be such a wreck.
Yeah.
Like I would have the weirdest eating disorders that would all be based in fear.
Yeah.
Like ordering food from a restaurant that could kill you? Oh,
God. Yeah, it's insane. Yeah, that's when people write, like, you know, the tickets, like gluten allergy, nut allergy, I'm like kind of like crazy about it. I'm like, hey, wash your hands, change your gloves. Like, I need to see everything before you guys send it out, you know? And it's kind of like, I don't want to be like responsible because.
Why would you?
Absolutely. Yeah. Not. And it's to be a customer, to have that, it's like, I don't want to say you should stay home and not eat out because it is true. What if somebody is like accidentally touch a nut and then by chance, you know? And
because just, if you're not thinking about it, you can do stuff like that accidentally all the time. Yeah.
And it can be like a minor thing. They like use the same salt from 2 days ago. Yep, and exactly. I'm just kind of like, I don't want the customers to go out feeling like they should fear their life, you know, because it's sad. People should have great food every day.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just kind of like every time when someone complains, like, oh, so many allergies, I'm like, this is our job. We should cook the food that they want with our cautions. Like,
and I think it's hard too, because people sometimes cannot even be well informed about their own conditions. And I think doctors are really impatient people and like don't explain things well. But I worked in a bakery that had like a loaf of like spelt bread, if I'm remembering correctly, and a loaf of rye bread. And people would come in and be like, oh, you have spelt bread. That's great because I have celiac. And when they would actually, instead of being like, I'm gluten intolerant or something, if they would actually say, I have celiac, I like have an attitude problem and I basically couldn't wait on them because they shouldn't be in the bakery.
Yeah.
If they have celiac. And if they have celiac, the spelt loaf isn't going to not make them extremely ill because it was, there's wheat, it's flour everywhere. Particles everywhere.
Yeah.
And I hated that because I was like, I don't think you have celiac, but what if you do and your doctor's a dick and he just like didn't explain it to you properly?
Right? They're like, tell you a little note like, oh, you can't eat this.
Yeah. Just being like, and that is the thing that I think it's so dangerous because some people find it easier if they like really, really dislike something or they know that something will like make them vomit. They say, and that's an intolerance or an aversion. They say like, I'm allergic to it, to waiters or whatever, because they want to make sure they don't get it. But then people in the service industry are like, yeah, I've heard that 100 times. And you don't mean it.
Yeah. And it's hard because it's kind of like servers like know when someone's are trying to be like very difficult.
Yes.
But then at the same time, they're kind of like, what if it's true?
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, a lot of people are misinformed from their doctors. Like, you can't eat this, but you might be able to eat it in a few months, you know, because it's just kind of like, so are you allergic or?
Well, and that's the thing too, right? Is that these things can be really touch and go. And I know like my grandpa, for instance, he's allergic to so many things, but it's fine unless he encounters like both of them at once. Like if he's at someone's house and they have a cat, that's fine. If he's at someone's house and they have a cat and there's tomatoes in the food and he eats it, it's going to be a disaster.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Wow.
So it can be like a combination of environmental things. Oh, and I do remember one, I think when I was a kid, one news story that like became so read about because it was so unusual at that time is that a group of elementary school students, like second graders or something, had gone on a field trip, and for lunch their teachers had taken them to a Chinese restaurant and ordered Kung Pao chicken, and the guy was like, the little kid was like, I'm allergic to peanuts, and they're like, no, you're not, and so he ate it and died.
Oh,
right.
Oh my goodness.
So that's hard too, because like if you're a child, you're taught to trust adults and then they'll kill you.
Yeah. Like, you can eat it, you know, don't be a wuss, but wow, that is so sad.
It's horrible. It's absolutely horrifying. And I think, like, really gives context to, like, schools saying, like, you can't bring food from home anymore, and airplanes, like, not serving peanuts on flights anymore. Like, it seems like such an overreaction, but one kid dying is obviously too many, so it's not. It's a little bit of a hassle for the rest of us that we can deal with.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I know there's like a post, a meme that went out recently that I saw that like, if my kid can't bring peanut butter, like your kid can't bring this. And I forgot what the this part was. And I was just like, wow, it's crazy because peanut butter now, it's like kind of like a deathly weapon in a sense. And I'm just kind of like, something so innocent.
Totally. But also parents getting upset about not having peanut butter sandwiches, like get some empathy and also maybe get a life.
Yeah.
My God.
Right? Give them peanut butter at home. You know? They don't need to eat it. Yeah. Thing.
People get weird.
Yeah.
Very weird. anyway, back to almond milk. So in East Asia, it's been like its own product, its own thing. And in Europe, around the time that Northern Europeans started caring about Lent, so when Catholicism was on the rise, it was actually used as a dairy substitute. Because this is back in the day when Lent used to be a lot more strict and they weren't supposed to eat any animal products. So it included dairy at the beginning. Wow. So cooks back then, like early Middle Ages, figured out how to get liquid out of almond and use it as a milk substitute. But then over time, people just started enjoying it on its own because it's sweeter than dairy milk. And it became, there were desserts that were built around almond milk. A lot of the like custardy, puddingy type stuff are meant to be made from almond milk.
Interesting.
So substitutes and that sort of thing have a long history. Or not substitutes, just enjoying it on its own.
Yeah. I think it's like they did it as a substitute and then it became a lifestyle. Like, right. I do like almond milk. I do like this. Wow.
Yeah. People get used to things over time.
Or maybe they're fancy.
Yeah. And almond butter is just, and any of the butters as opposed to like a milk, is just smashing it. And not draining anything out.
Almond butter? I don't know. If I remember making my own almond butter, I just kind of blended it up.
Exactly.
Just like, but then that's the same way with almond milk. Because almond milk, when I made my own version, was I soaked it with dates and vanilla bean overnight. And then blend it up and strain it. Which is kind
of
like.
So it's just the added step of the straining it.
Yeah. But then it's like two different complete opposite product. Like something is milky, something is chunky.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, exactly. And the stuff that they have to do to make it shelf stable.
Like
Skippy and all and Jif and all that kind of stuff. That's the adding in the oils and the right amount of sugar and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. Which is why if you make your own, it's not as shelf stable.
Yeah. You have to like make sure that it's like within like 14 days or something like that. But, you know, at the same time, you're not going to make a good amount of almond butter or cashew butter because it's so expensive. Nuts are expensive.
There's you know that Justin's nut butters.
Yeah.
I was reading an interview with him and his first grinder cost $6,000 and was the size of a car. So I'm like, okay, so for home use. Yeah.
It's like what do you use? Yeah.
And I think it's funny the different ingredients that people add and the things that people think are delicious. For instance, I just checked and I Googled like marzipan almond butter. And there's so many people out there who so desperately want for marzipan and almond butter to be the same thing.
Really?
Because then they could just eat marzipan and call it healthy. It's like, no. Marzipan is mostly sugar with some almonds. And then I was reading, this made me crazy. This is one of those, this is why I hate food media issues. excuse me, an article that ranked various nut butters, like ones that you can buy at the store. And they, in the introduction to the article, it was like, it's really best to find ones that the only ingredient is the nut itself. You don't want anything else in there. It was very hippy dippy. And then I kid you not, in at least three quarters of the blurbs about the various different products that they were trying, they were like, it really could use some salt. Guys, you just said that it should be like all natural, like only one ingredient, simple is best. And then you're like, it doesn't taste good.
It needs this and it needs that.
Which goes to your earlier point about like when you were trying these new to you nut butters, you were like, what? You can add like various seasonings to it. Like seasoned things just taste good.
Yeah.
Shockingly.
Right? Flavor in your life.
And then have you ever done like chestnut paste?
Chestnut paste? No, but Asians cook a lot with chestnuts and like roasted chestnuts and then like water chestnuts and things like that.
Yeah.
But I've never had it in a paste form, which is now that I'm going to go home and think about
it. So good. So it's funny because it's like really popular in Italy and France where like roasted chestnuts in the winter, it's just like a street snack. And then they also do this paste. It's more like a preserve. I would say. And I don't know if that's because they're like a little bit mushier to start with or just the way that it's made in Europe or whatever. I did notice that when they market it to Americans, they call it chestnut butter. But it's really
like a paste.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can picture it being more like pasty, like because it's like when you bite into a chestnut versus like an actual nut, it's like chalky in a sense, like. I don't know. I'm just trying to picture it.
Isn't it sort of like moister?
Yeah. Really, really moist. And it's like. Even if you roast it, it's still very moist. Yes. So it's like kind of, I can picture it being more wet.
Right.
But then at the same time, we're talking about a pace, you know, it's kind of like a different version, but I can see it.
It's like slightly different, but like why and where do we make these distinctions? Mm-hmm. I guess it's like
just texture, I guess, like how you eat it.
Like, and it's sort of like, you know, it when you see it or taste it or smell it type of thing, whether you think it's like a jam or a butter.
Yeah. I definitely didn't go buy chestnut paste or
butter. Whatever they call it.
Yeah. Right. I'll go to a market today after this.
You should. It's really good. Okay, so this is something you know about since you sell them. Are there like combination nut butters? Like, I don't know, like pecan cashew in one jar?
Yeah, there's all, we don't sell those. I think we just do almonds only. But there is a bunch of mixed nuts. Like there's a lot that has like hazelnuts, almonds, cashew.
Okay.
Or like that big, big nut. I don't know what it's called.
Oh, but
like,
the filberts?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like things like that. They just do a lot of mixed nuts butter, which I prefer just because it like it becomes like more of a balanced dish in a sense. Like,
really?
Like you get a little bit of everything and you can't really distinctly tell, oh, I taste hazelnut right now and an almond to finish, you know? But it's like kind of in a different element where like, you know, cashews are a little bit sweeter and creamier and almonds are like a certain way. And you just kind of like get that like, oh, interesting. And then the nuttiness from, you know, the hazelnuts or like if they use a different type of almond, you know, there's so many different types of almonds where flavors just kind of goes in sense. But mixing it becomes a balance and you get like different dietary fibers from different nuts. And
but like it tastes good. It kind of reminds me of how, I mean, it seems so normal to us now, but like mixed lettuces.
Mm-hmm.
When that, it used to just be like you had a certain type of green in a bowl and now you mix it up and people are like, whoa, more than one flavor in a salad?
Yeah, exactly. Like different leaves and stuff like that. Uh-huh. It's almost the same way where you get kale and then arugula with the bitterness and then the freshness from the romaine.
Yeah.
And if they add like frisée and everything like that, it's just like, whoa.
Yeah.
My salad is fancy.
So I wonder with the combo nut butters, do you have to like not mush it as much if you want to get like the different elements? You can't just like grind it all to hell,
right? I think they might do it separately and then mix it because different nuts have different textures, you know. That's the way that I see it, because it always comes out as one consistency, not like chunky here and then smooth there,
right?
But I think the best way to do it, because if you're gonna break down like a pine nut versus an almond, it's gonna obviously pine nuts is gonna be done by the time almonds are even broken
down. Very true. So I feel like this is a cool thing that people can try at home.
Mm-hmm.
Just make small batches.
Yeah, definitely.
But can you do it in a regular blender? You don't have to.
Regular blender tends to overwork it. I don't know if you guys have ever used like a blender and you're trying to blend up ice and it just stops. Like that's what happens with even restaurant stuff. I would prefer you guys to use like a food processor, because like the way that the blade is bigger and it's wider in a sense where like a blender, it's like kind of only going towards one direction. Like a Roboco is kind of, or, you know, food processors on one flat surface.
Uh-huh.
And then it's just break it down faster.
No, that makes a lot of sense. This is so, I mean, people could just like add some spices or whatever to it, try it out, see what they like.
Yeah, definitely.
It's funny. It's, I think nut butters are the ultimate like, are we doing this for health or are we doing it for pleasure type thing?
Yeah.
Because what I think about Nutella a lot, generally. I think about it. And that is, I hesitate to call anything unhealthy because you never know what people's nutritional needs are or anything.
Yeah.
But I will say that Nutella does have a lot of sugar and a lot of empty calories. So for what it's worth, it's not necessarily something that you're like, I'm going to feel great after eating
this or whatever.
But you could make Nutella at home.
Yeah.
You could just grind up some hazelnuts.
And then just add some chocolate and things like that.
Like pour Hershey syrup.
It's insane because that's when, I think maybe that's what started the whole nut butter. Now that I'm thinking about it. Because like I didn't eat peanut butter growing up and peanut butter was just a standard.
Yeah.
But then hazelnut was kind of like, oh.
Yes. Yes.
This is what we can do with nuts. And then I started seeing maybe that was a start, like.
God,
a guilty pleasure.
That makes so much sense because I too didn't really like peanut butter. And the first time I had Nutella, I was like, are you joking?
Yeah.
And my parents will let me eat this for breakfast.
Yes. That was like my go-to.
Yes. Nutella is so good. So I think you might be right, because Nutella had been popular in Europe for forever. Mm-hmm. And then they like made their push into other countries.
Yeah.
And it's wildly successful.
Yeah, but maybe we are late bloomers because maybe in like Europe and everything like that, they have almond butter because they have like those little almond bisque, like cookies and stuff like that. And I'm just kind of like, why don't we have something like this? And then they start coming with cookie butter that has almonds in it. And I'm just kind of like, are we late on this boat? You know, but yes. Hazelnut is the Nutella is actually the first version that I've seen now that I'm thinking about it. Than peanut butter.
Me too. Yeah, no, totally. You're totally right. Me too.
Because...
And you know there's that show, The Good Place? Have you seen this?
I've seen a lot of ads, and I don't want to get into it because I'm the type of watcher that would binge.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't want to lose on sleep.
I get it. I totally get you. He does have... There's this line. This is not a spoiler to say, but they have... they're super into frozen yogurt on that show. And a non-human on that show goes, God, that frozen yogurt, this is just the most human thing to take something incredible and make it less good so you can have more of it. And I think that's especially true of Americans in humanity. And so, like, we're talking about Europe being like, oh, yeah, hazelnuts and chocolate, get into it. It tastes good. That's all we care about. And Americans being like, make it healthier.
Yeah. So I can have more.
Yeah.
And not feel guilty.
Yeah. We're such nerds. Oh, man. Well, thank you so much for coming and talking about all this.
Yeah. Thank you for inviting me. I learned a lot.
Oh, good. And I'm super stoked to, like, explore the world of nut butters.
Yeah, definitely. I'll take a picture. I'll send it to you.
Awesome.
Here's a new version.
Yes. No, that would be amazing. I could post it on the Smart Mouth Podcast Instagram. Speaking of which, if people want to follow your adventures.
Oh, yes. I have Instagram. I don't have Twitter or any other. I mean.
Instagram's the way to go.
Yeah. It's just my name, Jess Lou He.
Okay. You should spell that for people.
Oh, JESSLIUHE.
Awesome.
There's a lot of bad food in there, though. Just a fair warning.
You keep calling things bad, but you got to change your mindset about that.
Yeah, I don't know. If you guys see like, oh, she eats that and that and that. And you're just going to be like, oh.
She's living her best life.
Yeah. I'm going to give you guys a lot of temptations.
Yes. Well, that's kind of your job, right?
Right.
Like, it behooves you to get people to be like, oh, I have to go to a restaurant now.
Yeah.
Like, it's your industry. You want people spending money in it.
Right?
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you again.
And everybody tell one friend to listen to Smart Mouth. Have a good week. Bye. To get a wildfire.